said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. We have an awesome guest for you, DeAndra Laser, Captain Sassy Media. She's a producer, journalist, podcaster, cosplayer. I feel like all of the above. If you're on horror internet, you've definitely seen Sassy Sledgehammer or DeAndra Kruger out there, which I thought was your last name. What's up, DeAndra? How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing pretty darn good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. We were talking before. Also have Brian with us, as always.
Yeah, you know. With you, always. It's fine.
Yeah, Brian, too.
Brian, hey, guys. Yeah,
I'm here. You're actually legally obligated to have a third head, floating head, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. Right.
Well, I don't know.
You don't have to call the cops.
The man on the couch.
Rule. Everybody knows.
How's it going? I know we're at the, well, it's like spooky season for us all year round, I feel like, but like it's the tail end, I feel, of the like fall season push. How are you feeling after that? Do you like get everything you need to get out and like a reset? I know I'm doing that right now.
I feel like I did stuff, but I didn't do enough.
Okay.
I feel like that happens every year. I did hit one museum, or not museum, maze here in Las Vegas. That was pretty good. I went to this cute little like town thing that was for like kids and families. And then we've been making our way through all of the Halloween films because we've just going by franchise by franchise.
Oh, nice. That's Nightmare. Always
then
fun.
I was like, yeah. So now the last ones we have are the three remaining last Blumhouse trilogy movies.
It's grown on me.
Listen, I have a hot take, and I freaking love Halloween Ends. I don't know if it's just the fact that
in this
that
house,
I,
we respect Halloween
We respect
ends, okay?
If,
thank
like,
you!
If,
I loved it.
If
I mean,
I
didn't like
is my favorite one of the trilogy, I'm not going to lie.
I didn't like
mine
it at
too.
First. And then... because of Brian, I rewatched it, and then this year, and now I'm in the camp of it's a better movie than not. It actually got Halloween 3 from it, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, no, this is good.
Yeah. Because
yeah,
I know that a lot of people were like, to close out a trilogy, and then they had some ideas like, you know, maybe if we'd introduced Corey earlier, or if you know, he'd lived and gone on to become like passing the torch with the shape. I thought that was interesting. But when you think about it, like you kind of got that message in there in a way. And I love the voiceover from Lori about, you know, how you handle trauma. You know, you could kind of turn and become like Corey, or you could become like a hero in a way. And, I just really
no. That's all I like that you. I like that you say that. Yeah, they did. So where that was to me, because I'm not a fan of kills. I think that's the weakest one of that trilogy.
Same. Well, that's when you were saying too about like, oh, it would have been nice if they build up Corey. It's like, yes, I too wish Halloween Kills was a better movie. Had like they could have used that in a better way.
Halloween Kills.
Like, you know what I mean? I was like, yeah. I agree. It, that would have been a good use of Halloween Kills.
They completely, for me, botched it by just like wasting their best character, which is Judy Greer.
Yeah.
In that movie. And then you're like, oh no, if you don't have Corey, she's who I want to follow in this third movie to be like whatever we do. Anyway, that's a whole different podcast. But you're working your way through those franchises. Is there any like white whale franchise you have horror movie wise, or you know that you're like that's the one I want to get through that either you haven't or you haven't given that much time to?
I think it's got to be Texas Chainsaw because I have seen like a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but I have not seen all of the Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, it's a blind spot for me,
too.
There are
so many out there. Yeah, and Leatherface.
They vary so wildly, too, in quality and style and tone. It's a wild franchise.
Just going from the first to the second, I was like, what is this, like, pivot? And I honestly really like the remake. I think the remake's
phenomenal.
So great.
The 2003 remake, and I actually like, I think Beginnings is not too shabby either.
Yeah.
I think those are both, that two movie, like, little
Darley
set is not bad. I don't know if they've done, everything they've done since that has been kind of suspect, but I do think.
Like, what'd you guys think of the Netflix one?
It was pretty rough.
I'll tell you what, I like the subversion they did with their, like, bringing back the old heroine character. They had some fun with that, and it does have a good, like, last moment. It had a really great, like, final, like, okay, they got me, like, in that final moment. I was like, all right, I'll give them that one, you know? But overall, again, like I said, I don't think it's one of those franchises that I think has been kind of limping along a bit, you know?
The Netflix. I don't
know. Like The Exorcist.
that's another one that, you know what? I mean, I haven't seen the new one. We basically just, in passing, rewatched all of them.
I actually have not seen, like, The Exorcist 2 or 3. I think I've only seen the first one, part of the TV show. I do want to see the new one, but I just never got around to it while it was in theaters.
Just covered 2. I don't think it benefits, kind of like how we're talking about Nightmare 2 today. I don't think it benefits how, like, Nightmare 2 and Halloween 3 and these movies have been, like, rediscovered and, like, repropped up. It's kind of just a bad movie that is really
goofy. All the goodwill that could have been given to that is already taken by Exorcist 3. People already like that one. And they're like, we don't have time to give both of these a reappraisal, so you get one, all right?
So
we'll give you Exorcist 3. That's a pretty good movie.
So what I'll say is, if you're going to do Exorcist 3 is just a out-of-the-park, awesome, great horror movie. It's super weird and interesting.
I've heard, so I'm excited.
I'm just waiting around for Dracula 2000 to get that sweet reappraisal.
My god, hold on a second. I love Dracula 2000. Listen,
I just rewatched
girl is a huge Phantom of the Opera fan, so, like, when I was in my Gerard Butler 2004 era, I discovered Dracula 2000, and
it's,
I was like,
Rain
what
of
is
Fire,
this magical
Dracula 2000,
dude. Oh my gosh. Dude, I love Dracula 2000. That early 2000s takes place in Louisiana, got Wes Craven involved, but, like, Jennifer Esposito, Vitamin C.
Sweet early 2000s.
I know what you're coming back for. That's it. That's what.
We just locked her in.
Yeah, you just made me.
Oh my gosh, Dracula 2000.
Never seen it.
That origin story, that take on why he's Dracula, I was like, smart. I actually really like that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm waiting. It deserves reappraisal.
Stuff gets its reappraisal. It's just bound to happen.
You just got to give it enough time.
Agree.
Oh, that's awesome. But anyway, we do on the show, Deandra, is I like to learn about your, like, horror origin story, and kind of always like to prop that up as, you know, I mean, we know you're into horror, it's your social media background, but, like, what that origin means to you, and kind of either, you know, whether you're into it or not into it. So, you know, how'd you get so into this genre and everything, I guess?
Well, I was bit by a radioactive spider. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I was born in October, so I always kind of really liked spooky things like Hocus Pocus growing up, or I would watch the Haunted Mansion section of this, like, Disney VHS that showed the parks.
Mm-hmm.
It was really weird. I used to watch that all the time, and I liked The Wizard of Oz, and
We're big proponents of starter horror. We love starter
horror. Huge starter horror. Yes. But it's also, I understand that's same thing. It's that, like, attraction of, like, I couldn't tell you what the name of Hocus Pocus was, but I'd be like, oh, the one we watch on Halloween with the witches. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. I would watch a lot of like Fox Family back in the day when they'd have their like 13 Nights of Halloween.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm talking The Hollow, Good Ghouls Gone Bad.
Good Ghouls Gone Bad?
Good Ghouls Gone Bad, yeah, with Christopher Lloyd.
You are a... Wait, it's behind here. It's another sec. I have it. It is one of my favorites. No one ever mentions that movie.
I feel like
you'd also be where is one I'd pull from. I was just trying to get my nephew to... He's 2.5. He didn't watch anything. But the Arthur
Never Hall Too Young. Special. Get him going. You know?
Oh, yeah.
We're big proponents of starter horror. I'll watch still anything to this day if it's like geared to that and be like, yeah, it's enjoyable and fun. It's comfort food.
It is. And it's got that like special nostalgia, especially those made for TV movies way back when. Like, I watched them all the time, but I was never allowed to watch horror, but my cousin was really big into the Universal Monsters. My grandma had the VHS tapes, so I would watch The Wolfman and Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman the most. Dracula scared me way too much. And I just kind of was always fascinated. And then I had a random dream while on vacation with my family that Freddy was after me. And I woke up and somehow was super interested in who he was. We got home. I went to the video store, rented Freddy's Dead, and the rest is history.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a...
It's so funny the way I went trick-or-treating, took my son, and we always go with some friends of ours, and their little boy was dressed as Ghostface, and they're not like a horror family. This kid has not seen Scream. But like, it's just that way of like, they're just, those horror icons get kids so young, like the Freddies, the Jasons, the Ghostfaces. You can't, like, they don't need to see the movies. They know that iconography is just strong, you know?
I remember my neighbors who were older teased me about, you know, Freddy Krueger, but they propped him up as the boogeyman and like a boiler room before I even, you know, ever saw a clip of it. It happens. So then did it just progress of just been like more and more? Because Freddy's Dead is also just such an interesting one.
It is so weird. I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. Yeah. And then I watched...
You could definitely start with that one and be like, oh, this is nice and fun.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did for like a newbie horror fan. Now, I also want to say I was in high school. I was a freshman becoming a sophomore in high school. So I was a late bloomer when this awakening occurred, despite like loving...
That's not that late. I don't think that.
I mean, a lot of people talk about like 4 and 5 years old, 3 years old, you know.
I was afraid of everything.
I was 14.
Yeah, I was afraid of everything. And then I was interested, you know, into it.
Yeah.
For me, it was seeing Dawn of the Dead in theaters and being like, oh, horror movies could be funny. Yeah. And then immediately being turned away when being like, well, I'll try this House of 1,000 Corpses, and being about that, like 12 years old. I think that 12 years old and going, oh no, I'm not ready for the big leagues.
Dang.
I don't think 14, I don't think it's late. But the irony of it is, like, my wife's a fraidy cat, like scaredy cat of everything. Like, she'll go through, and that's why I like a lot of starter horror too, because I'm like, oh, let's watch this. Mm-hmm. But we were going to go to a haunted drive-in that we were doing recently. And we're going to see Nightmare on Elm. Cool. Yeah, they come scare you. It was on a farm. Really fun. We did Trick or Treat. But we were going to go back for Nightmare on Elm Street. And I was like, she wanted to go just to like kind of FOMO, like with friends were going. Mm-hmm. But I go, you know what? I'll show you like a behind the scenes stuff. And I'm just only telling the story because of how effective it is still. I go, I'll tell you when to turn your eyes and this and that. But I'll show you the movies that made us, the Netflix one, because it's such it's like silly, like behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So originally I was going to show her the Never Sleep Again section for one. But then we watched and he goes, yeah, no, I'm pretty freaked out. I went to go get food out of the basement and thinks Freddy is there. I'm like, you just saw all the stuff being made. So it's still extremely effective.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, some people are like, it doesn't hold up today. And I'm like, well... maybe not for you, but, you know, some people are still terrified of the movie, especially the first one. Maybe not so much the rest of them, but the earlier entries.
I mean, we haven't gotten into actually talking about it, but I think the Freddy design in this, in Freddy's Revenge, it's really still very scary.
It's the most sinister Freddy. I have that hands down. That is law.
Very scary with the eyes and everything else.
Yeah. I made a TikTok of, like, while I was watching it, of just, like a collage of Freddy's Revenge. I've been making them. And people comment. It's doing pretty well. And every comment is like, yeah, he's so gooey. Like, that's the note. He's gooey.
He looks so wet.
He's soaked.
Yeah,
that's a moist Krueger right there.
Right. Well, he's in the shower a lot. You know, he's always saying
he was. That's where he got wet. Yeah. He's sweaty. You know, there's a lot of moisture.
A lot of towel. A lot of like towel fights and frolicking.
The movie is not shy. But yeah, I guess we'll just go right to it. So yeah, we're talking about Nightmare 2.
Heck yes.
Yeah. So, Deandra, why you kind of told me in your email, like, why Nightmare 2? Because I like I said, you know, like, I know you embrace the final, just knowing yourself, like, what you do so well is you bring the forefront of the final girl out and, like, you know, make that the star of everything and not the monster. So picking Nightmare 2 is, I think, so interesting for, like I said, kind of knowing your, at least, social media presence. Why Nightmare 2? And kind of thank you for picking it also.
Oh, because Nightmare 2 to me is just that movie that people still pick on a lot that I like to talk about. People will always say things like, oh, it's not a great entry in the franchise. It doesn't really belong. It's not a good sequel to the first movie. And I always like to talk about that. And I find it to be so incredibly scary. And sometimes people just really gloss over how terrifying Freddy is and how well the movie is made. But I also think there's just so much to discuss. Like, there's not a final girl. There's Jessie. But at the end, Lisa is the one who technically beats Freddy. So she's technically the final girl. You know, it's like things to talk about like that. Or the gay undertones. Or how it's evolved over the years. Or undertones. Mark Patton. What did I say? Underwear?
No, I'm saying, like, it's
oh, just, oh, yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
But you don't know Mark Patton. No,
I love him.
Yeah. No,
Scream
it's
Queen, I mean.
Well, I was going to say, that was my thing with this movie always, too, was, like, always kind of presented as, like, as kind of a black sheep. But I always remember, even from it was one that I felt like I hadn't seen as much. And it was kind of, like, a black sheep. And then when I finally, you know, got to where I owned all of them and I was watching them all, like, in sequence, and I was watching, I was like, this is pretty good. I don't understand. And that was even before I was still very naive to there's some things that are like very overt, but then like when you watch it with the full lens of like understanding the writing and stuff, and there's a lot more. But even then I was like, just on a surface level, I was like, this feels pretty solid. I think there's a couple things we'll talk about that like maybe like not quite as strong as the first one, but overall, especially in context of the whole franchise, I think it's pretty good.
I think, like, it's like every,
it's definitely a bridge.
So this is this is, you know, this is my favorite franchise too, and I think like every, but having that, I'm self-aware enough, like every Nightmare movie, it's still like they're all goofy at heart, you know, even like the first one with the coffee under the bed, you know, like there's things in there, like, you know. And this one, it just also has that DNA like every other. So like, I think it gets faulted for that. I just watched Scream Queens right after this, cause I was like, I never got around to seeing it. And like, it also just shines such a big perspective on what was happening with this movie. And then seeing it actually like re-embraced by the queer community and it, you know, being championed is, it makes the movie even better to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, it has its moments, so, you know, I'm sure make fun of and pick on a little bit, but it's a strong movie. And I actually have a very Ohio question for you two later. I know
it is supposedly in Ohio, right?
No, we don't have palm trees.
No, it's not the palm trees. It's a pool party. Like, I'm an East Coast person. A pool party at the end of September, October in Ohio just doesn't.
Yeah, that probably doesn't gel too well.
Anyway, that was like one. Didn't see anyone ever talk about that. You know, talk about the signs in the background and this. So, but yeah. I love that answer of why picking it and saying that, like, yeah, right at the end, like, Lisa somehow out of nowhere is, you know, young Meryl Streep is the.
Yeah. Is the, I was, she was giving me some Jennifer Grey energy.
She does have a bit of it, yeah. I didn't realize that this was all like redug up to from Never Sleep Again. Because I've watched Never Sleep Again like sporadically since it's been released. It's just like and then I can regurgitate all the same shit out that's just like, you just watched the documentary. I did buy the book and I never read it, but I own it. But
looks good on your shelf, I bet.
Hey, yeah. It's a really good. Do you have the paperback or do you have
paperback.
The paperback?
I have the paperback.
I was lucky. I was like there in the beginning, so I got the big thick book, which is really hard to come by and super expensive now.
Oh,
so
I'm sure.
If my house catches on fire, I'm grabbing that. I'm grabbing the new Nightmare painting and I'm booking it.
Good. No, but I. Yeah, no, I have the paperback. I'll read it one day. I need to go on like a long vacation or something. But yeah, the movie itself, it's one of those ones that's discovered its audience, and but it, as a Freddy movie, I love that it's a possession movie. And as before that, before we kind of start running through it, though, I do like to read blindly the synopsis, and we kind of just judge if it's correct or not, because a lot of these Google synopsises are like, Scream was a popular movie in 1996 made by Wes Craven, you know.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they're not wrong.
That's why we do it. So.
It's not a great synopsis.
I could give me a little bit more.
Yeah. So Jesse Walsh moves with his family into the home of the lone survivor from a series of attacks by dream stalking monster Freddy Krueger. There, Jesse is bedeviled by nightmares and inexplicably violent impulses. It turns out Freddy needs a host body to carry out his gruesome vendetta against the youth of Springwood, Ohio. While Freddy gains influence, Jesse and his girlfriend Lisa race against the clock trying to figure out what's going on. That's pretty accurate. That's a pretty good synopsis, actually.
Except I felt like they went out of their way to not say Nancy. Like, I feel like they talked around the name. They could have just said Nancy, but they say, like, five words to describe her instead.
Yeah.
Lone survivor of all the terrible things that happened back in the day, 5 years ago, you know.
You remember, from the first movie.
From the first movie. But this movie, I always found it also has that such interesting way to production path, right? Like, what I used to say about this movie, when people would ask me, like, oh, they didn't even want to have Robert Englund be Freddy because they were too cheap, right? And then, like, there's a few shots of, like, the stuntman that they thought could get away with before reeling. That's your franchise. Yeah, the janky walking. But I always found that so interesting about it, because, like, how do you not know, like, this is your...
And that's the era too. People didn't like, nowadays we think of like a successful movie, you put more money into the sequel, but like
not Bob
in
Shea.
The '80s, it was like a successful movie, you pump out an even cheaper sequel to wring even more money. And that's why you got these like diminishing quality. Like that's why it became such a, like a joke to, when your movie had 4 and 5 sequels. But like now we think of like, no, that's a franchise. They're building something,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
you got a budget.
Yeah, it had an ish budget. And then you had Kevin Yeager taking over, like I said, the Freddy design, which this is definitely, like, I think it's this, for me, it's this design's, like, the meanest next to, like, the demon look they gave him in Freddy vs. Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan of New Nightmare with the rubber face, but I know that's controversial.
It's a cool makeup. But no, part 2 has the best,
yeah.
Like that witchy look, and his eyes brownish
high
red, and the teeth. Oh, so beautiful! And like we were talking about earlier, before we started the podcast, about how how wet and gushy and slimy he is.
When he pulls the head back and then it's like pulsing and stuff. Oh, so great. Such a great makeup.
I got the body and you got the body and I got the brains or whatever the fuck it is. I'm not good at quotes. But we do start off. Love that voice, though. Yeah, I can do the voice. Close. Give me more time. we do start off though. I do like how it does start with like Bob Shea getting his wish of having Freddy like driving around a bus. Mm-hmm. Just because the ending of the first movie. But no, the opening scene I think is really fun and sets that like tone, and you don't know there's this nerdy kid and everyone's laughing at him.
I love how like nerdy they make Jesse in that opening scene too. He's like hair's all matted down to his head and everything.
He's got eyeliner on.
Yeah,
he looks super emo.
He looks kind of like emaciated a little bit.
And I love that Joanne Willette is in it as one of the girls on the bus, because then her Brooke from part four, who played Debbie, and then Heather were all in Just the Ten of Us together. Yep. And that was that running joke that, you know, these were these nightmare girls. And so they were always talking about nightmare on the show. And so it's always fun to see her around in that. And then they all come back.
Yeah, I saw her in the Scream Queen documentary and I was like, one of the girls from the bus? People are paying for that autograph? But I'm like, okay, I get the connection now. I see. I got it.
Yeah. No, I remember that's in Never
Sleep Again. For anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got, you know, I've only gotten a chance to pay for Heather Langenkamp's autograph, and I did it. So I would do it. You know, I'm in the bag as well.
I fucked up this year. I went to my first horror con in Cherry Hill, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and I was on a super budget, and Heather Langenkamp was there, and literally the minute I left, I was like, why did I not just
you have the balls to say that in front of me?
I'm sorry, DeAndre.
Make time for her?
Looked at her from afar. And
I was a big old creep.
And I was like, this is cool. I said I'm not going to buy anything. You know, I'm not going to spend more than this today. And anyway, next time, I promise.
All right.
I would have loved to meet her and have her sign whatever stuff I had in my hands. But yeah, being at a horror con was very cool, and I can't wait to go to more.
Horror cons are fun.
That was my first Monster Mania.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, Monster Mania.
Very fun.
Yeah. I'd love to go to Monster Mania.
Yeah, we just did the Sunday. It was super neat. I wish I did have that goal to do the signings and all of that. And then, like,
it's true. It is an expense to, like, get out and start getting some signings. I mean, you know, it's not.
Especially now.
You got to budget it, you know?
I budgeted it, and I was buying some artwork. And
it's only gone up, too. Yeah, like, I remember the first couple years, like, back in the early 2000s before Wizard World made the convention circuit like a thing. You could go, you know, I got my Kane Hodder autograph didn't cost me very much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My first con was in 2011. It was $20 for an autograph plus a photo.
That's great.
So, the photo came with it this year.
Yeah.
Wow. That was the best.
Nice. Yeah. No. Gotta get you more cons. I'm coming to Columbus to go to a con with Brian. That's what we discussed.
You go. There you go.
All right.
Nice.
But Nightmare 2. So yeah, anyway, I love that intro scene though, with like Robert Englund driving the bus and then like they're on that like pillar and like the lightning strikes and it's just very dreamlike, which is great.
Yeah.
It's also interesting because like that I this has nothing to do with the story right now, like how much of a grump kind of Wes Craven gets about the other Nightmare movies. It's so like, oh, but you created it, man, like it's all good anyway. I was
you unleashed this monster into the world.
That totally doesn't make sense. So anyway, he wakes up screaming, and we get a lot of screams. Like Mark Patton has such a great scream in this, and that's where I'm like, oh, that sucks. You like, okay, sorry if I'll bring up Scream Queens a lot and the reference to it, but like, it sucks that like that was a negative, using air quotes for anyone listening, for so long on it, because it's like, no, that makes the movie, and there's this like, it all fits. I don't know. It just all fits.
Like I said, when I first sat down with it, I wasn't picking up a lot of subtext, but like, Mark Patton does have a vulnerability to him, which is like the reason that it's clear when you watch Scream Queen that the director was oblivious. The writer may have had something going on, but the director is like insanely oblivious. So he reads the script and he just like picks a sensitive boy to play this role, and he just so happens to cast a closeted gay man. He didn't do it on purpose, you know, but like, he did cast somebody with a natural vulnerability, and Mark Patton just had that like kind of very innocent, beautiful boy face and everything. And like,
you know what really showed to me the vulnerability, and it's such an interesting choice. And I don't know how to say something, but so like when he's in the shower dream sequencing, the way he just walks with his hands and arms up on his body. But like, I know like, when I'm in the shower and I'm uncomfortable and if I'm naked or whatever, and around, like I'm holding my junk, not my nipples, basically. Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Like, I don't know. It's just a choice I noticed, like not even this watch, like months ago. I'm like, yeah, that's just these little things that happened. And I'm like, yeah, but yeah, he has this vulnerability in it. And I mean, it starts immediately, and his, also red flag. Apologies, Deandra, if you have it. A family with a bird. I mean, you know,
bad news. No, yeah. I don't have a bird.
We had
bird
one
people. Briefly. Okay, good. So we're all on board about bird people.
Yeah, we had one. We had one briefly in my house. I don't think my mom liked it very much, but my dad brought him. But no, bird red flag, especially like the dad. This might be a top five. Bad parent movie dad. He's awful.
Well, Nightmare has
such a jerk.
The Nightmare franchise has some pretty terrible parents, because in 3, her mom is pretty awful too. Got some, and honestly, Nancy's mom in the first one is not great.
Marge is a mess.
I wrote out a question for you is, do they, if you're talking to like Nightmare timelines and, you know, historians and things, is 2 in canon? Like when they say, so we get a reveal that, I'm skipping way ahead, that Nancy's mother killed herself and Nancy's, you know, been committed. That's kind of feels like rubbed clean. Like it's really never mentioned again, like in 3, about, you know, her mother or anything. But, like, are things in this movie canon, or are we kind of, like, not out of canon? You know, is it just, it's self-contained?
This movie is definitely canon. Basically, anything that's in the films, and then a couple of, like, other things, like certain comics are canon.
Okay.
So, saying that Nancy's mother killed herself was me imagining that, you know, maybe the story got passed around and it wasn't.
That's like the public
accurate.
Story that got
oh,
out.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Because like you can't be like, said, she turned into a skeleton and melted into her bed.
Yeah. No,
or like, you can't just tell people that.
It's lore.
But Nancy did get committed. There's the Innovation Publishing comics, which say, like, right after the events of the first one, she was sent over to a mental hospital, which is why it makes sense in 3 when she's like, I used to be like them, Neil. I know what they're going through, not just facing Freddy, but also like, actually being present in a mental hospital.
This makes
she was sane enough to get out.
This makes so much sense. All right. Thank you for it. Because I was like, wondering, I was like, yeah. Because you know what? Like these movies, I honestly, except for, in horror-wise, except for like Scream and The Child and Chucky, you know, people erase movies all the time. And that's why it's good to hear. Yeah. It's like, just keep it in.
They just never talk about part 2 stuff again, which is just super weird. But I think maybe New Line.
Well, like once it becomes all about the dream, like it's kind of like the way the Halloween movies. I know you've been watching them, and they have those like it seems Nightmare 3, 4, and 5 are like their own little trilogy, like the kind of Dream Powers trilogy. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wondered in Halloween. Speaking of kind of off topic, but did they like? because there's like the different timelines. Did they ever say like this movie's coming out and it's actually a part of a different timeline? Or were they just like, here's H20?
I don't think any, Brian would.
Yeah, at the time, definitely when H2O came out, the big thing was like, Jamie Lee's back. So this picks up from the last time Jamie Lee was in the franchise. It comes on. Mm. This is like a follow-up to Halloween 2. And, gotcha. You know, Josh Hartnett has some dialogue about how you watched him burn, and that's how he dies in Halloween 2. So those ones were definitely connected, and they just were like, we're wiping the Thorne trilogy clean. We're just walking.
Yeah, there's literally. I've looked at that timeline graph talking about this to so many
the
people.
Multiverse like, oh, there's, of madness.
There's four different timelines we could go with. Like, what? Don't talk to me.
The Halloween, Halloween 2, Halloween H2O, that's the core trilogy for me. That's what I live and die by that. But I love all the Halloween movies. I'm a glutton for punishment. I'll watch bad Halloween movies until I die.
Oh, yeah. Too. They all have something special. I love it. Even if the whole Thorne thing is kind of weird, and
we get Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is like a soap. He's a soap opera actor in it.
Yeah, he's a soap actor.
I feel like he's being like he knows.
He's very dramatic. He's dramatic because of his his little medallion on his necklace. It's up. It's not quite a choker, but it's very high.
He's acting like in the drama.
The higher the medallion, the more dramatic.
Right. Here. That's a drama boy. We know.
He's acting like the way he overacts in Wet Hot American Summer when he gets upset. Oh, yeah. You know, he's like, oh.
The gif exactly. You always see of him trying to open the door and bang it. And he's like, oh. It's like, he's just got that. He's giving some Mark Patton energy, actually, in that.
So, I'll bring it back to Mark Patton here. So we do watch, right, in this movie, goes to school, we meet a girl that, they seem to just be friends that are, flirting with each other, and that's, most of the relationship of the movie.
Well, they moved into the house, they're new to the area, right?
Yeah, and he's driving her. He has a very weird rig set up with his convertible.
The dinosaur.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice touch. But they just moved in but yeah, the first scene I'll just go to really is them working out on the, he has this Freddy nightmare and it starts off like the original. And I think what's interesting is they shy away from the group of friends. A great thing about the first nightmare is they feel like real friends. No one's over dramatic. They're all kind of, in the know with each other. And this one, it's like fish out of water. No one else except for this girl likes you. And then I don't know if a relationship, but your only friend's a guy you actively also hate in Rod.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real frenemy action going on with those two.
Yeah. And then they
some might say tension.
Well, then they do the worst push-ups of all time.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, it's also the weirdest gym class I've ever seen. Like, they're playing, baseball, but then other activities around. I don't know, I don't remember gym class, having to play, an actual, nine-inning, positional game.
We never did. We only had indoors.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe that's where we faulted.
I seem to remember there being, it was, you had a baseball week where you, baseball or learned baseseball.
Maybe that's an 80s thing.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I went to school in the 90s.
Jim, all right. Okay? I'm sorry, Brian. listen, we had kickball.
High school in the 90s.
I slid into the bleachers indoors and broke my nose and split it wide open, sliding into kickball.
Then
they stopped doing indoor sports like that at that elementary school.
Joe changed the world.
I did. I changed some kid's directory to not have kickball indoors.
We rode around on scooters. I mean,
that's fun. Those wheel things you sit on.
Oh yeah.
But they have that. It's at the gym class scene, and they fight, and it's your first little touch of the homoeroticism with his pants fall down. He's wearing a jock strap with no underwear on, which is also an interesting just choice in general. Gay, straight.
That's a horror. I feel like there's a couple horror movies where that's revealed. Now I think Sleepaway Camp's got a kid jock with no.
A sister movie in that, if you're going with queerness in that, from sure, the clothing to the look, I would put them on a double bill. together.
I always thought, like, look, I growing up, I did not really, like, have friends. I was not friends with boys that were, like, in sports. Mm. So, like, seeing the jockstrap, I was like, maybe it's because he's, like, playing gym that he's wearing this. Like, I had no idea how that went. But I was like, hot butt cheeks.
Yeah, hot butt cheeks. You know, if you're, I actually, I played like little league, like till like the fifth grade, or I was not good, but I'm pretty sure you wore underwear under it. But you're wearing a cup base because it's hard ball, and yeah, that ball will hit you there. But
right in those gray sweatpants.
Yeah, but at school, I just don't know. Anyway. Way too much time on that.
We got Marshall Bell as the coach. Yeah. I love Marshall Bell.
He's so good.
I'm a big Paul Verhoeven fan, and Marshall Bell's like a Paul Verhoeven guy who pops up in Paul Verhoeven movies. So.
They reveal that the coach. I also love.
Well, Grady tells it like it's a rumor. Like it feels like one of those things that kids say about a teacher.
Yes.
But then it does. You do find out it's true
that he hangs around at S&M clubs.
Yeah.
And
Bob Shea is the Leather Daddy bartender.
Bob Shea in the dock going, I had no
That's
idea.
One of my favorites.
It's like, oh, Bob Shea, you dressed up like Judas Priest and had no idea.
Bob Shea's got a leather vest and like a gauntlet on. It's like, oh, I didn't know. What?
Bob Shea, you're a Hollywood producer.
In the middle of the 80s, there's butt cheeks, there's leather S&M, there's all of throwing
like
balls
legitimate
around.
Bondage murders in this movie.
Yeah. I'm just like, how did that just go over everybody's head? How
the director
just
in
no way.
Hearing the director in Scream Queens, you're like, I can't believe you were competent enough to, because this movie's well made, and but like,
yeah,
the idea that none of this registered, that you were just like, you see these shots and you just, he's like a robot. He's just like, no, I just put what's on the page on the screen and I did not analyze it at all.
At the same time, like, I could totally see that with Jack Shoulder, because he's kind of like just like a kind of guy, you know,
point and shoot. Kid gets scared.
Well,
Freddy comes
in. The world needs workmen like directors too. Not everybody can be an auteur, you know?
Yeah.
But even like Grady, the actor, is like, no, I the minute I read it in the script, because like what Mark Patton keeps saying, why he has such like beef with the writer is, it's literally what you wrote word for word. Like, we're not making any choices here. And that's what's so like, one of the many things that's so heartbreaking about, you know, Mark's story. But yeah, the movie's riddled with all this stuff. So we keep, but anyway, they do that. And like, it's the worst push-ups of all time. I mean, I think we're supposed to think they're like 60 into them, which anyone would look like that.
They're very exhausted, Joe.
Yes. I get it. They have other classes to get to. I don't understand the,
I like the stuff with how the hot, oppressive heat in the house, and it starts just in Mark's room, but then it like takes over the whole house, and then eventually it even like burns up. The pool party is even hot, like the pool is boiling and stuff at one point and everything.
This is the closest.
The more powerful Freddy gets, the heat like radiates from him. Kind of. That's a cool element of this movie. I think
this is the closest Freddy. Freddy in Nightmare 2 is so similar to the tones in Freddy and Freddy vs. Jason, I'm noticing, comparatively of any of other
artists. Well, because the way he kind of possesses Jason in a similar way to give himself
the flames,
power.
There's a lot of firework. And I just noticed that.
People often just don't even think about that kind of stuff. Like, they are so quick to dismiss it, but if you really pay attention to the rest of the franchise, I mean, it's not totally off. And sure, Freddy comes into the real world and possesses Jesse, which I have a theory about that. But, like, he's kind of done that in, you know, Freddy versus Jason with, like, the caterpillar and Freeburg and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My theory is that when Nancy pulls him out of the dream in the first movie, she actually brings him into the in-between So like Dawn doesn't exactly see him, but Nancy does. Mm. And so she's kind of like brought him into this house and he possesses the house. He's kind of haunting the house. So he's a demon, which we, you know, end up learning out about later, but he's like this demonic presence that's in this house. And so he can possess Jesse.
I like that a lot, and that makes sense of how
it makes sense.
And then like Jesse would help him cross over and like maybe break out of that the house prison kind of thing.
Well, it's like, and it's like any possession
in the real world.
I need that body. I don't care how I get that body. It's any possession movie.
Yeah.
Right. Reagan and the Exorcist. It's like you'll kill the girl, and he's like the demon's like, great, that's my goal.
Yeah.
One more little connection to Freddy vs. Jason, just while we're talking about it, since it came up organically. I always get the same vibe when Freddy attacks the pool party as when Jason attacks the field party in Freddy vs. Jason. There's something very... Field. I think this is the time we ever see Freddy like attack a big crowd of people. You know, you never see Freddy like interact with like a big... And that's just like a different thing and that's also in this movie. I was trying to clock some things that are kind of unique to this version of Freddy. And that's definitely one. Seeing him run around like a whole crowd of people and menace like a group of kids was very fun and kind of different.
He looks like how Robert Englund runs around, like when you I've only seen videos of like in conventions, like kind of going scaring and this and that. Like it's such a good point there, Brian, especially like back to the Heat thematic of it too, like the way that pool bubbles and like I love the beer cans, you know, out of the Red Flyer popping off. And and I think that all starts with, like, was it the toaster goes in the house.
Yeah.
The bird spontaneously combusts.
Oh, man.
I love the bird scene. We do need to talk about the bird
scene. Yeah, well, that's
I'm watching it this time, and I love
it. Goddamn cherry bomb.
But I'm also like, an open hand slap will take that bird right out of the sky. Like, everybody's all, like just swat that thing down. The thing's like this big.
That's right. The second bird haunting I've watched, or evil bird I watched like in a week span. I watched Monkey Shines like a week ago, and there's also a bird riding. You know, the monkey kills that bird. It's the same bird in my mind. But that's where I want to get back to this dad port too. Is that's when weird shit goes on, and he's like, "What? I got a great got a great deal in this house." He's literally pulling like Ethan Hawke in a Sinister. Like, I mean,
I was also channeling the dad from Halloween, Back to Halloween, Halloween 6. I feel like that guy's pulling from Clu Gulager's playbook too. Only he's a little more abusive. Clu Gulager's like more like a kind of like, I don't know, I want to say like clueless. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not like as like outwardly aggressive.
He's a bargain buyer, man.
Yeah.
I'm looking for... What's going to come with Ben, huh? He didn't think anything for a house
right now, and...
Whenever we watch movies, my wife always asks me that. She's always like, would you buy this house? Every time, hell yeah. If they gave me a good enough deal, I'd buy it in a second.
We just turned one down for train tracks.
We'll take Nancy's room.
But that Elm Street house... I don't know, some pretty good.
The Elm Street house doesn't have a train or a highway out back. I'll take it. I wouldn't buy the Pet Cemetery house, but not because of the Pet Cemetery, because of that road.
You gotta watch out for that road.
Don't go down there.
Things don't come back right. I'm looking at my notes here. One thing I really do love about this movie, and a tone that they do nail in its direction, is these early scenes, though, when Jesse is waking up. It's the exact feeling I know I felt. Like, I grew up in, like, a suburban house, kind of similar, of, like, walking around at night to kind of, like, not... You got to get out of bed, I don't know, to get, you know, the scaries out. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they nail that well. And, I mean, like, him and Jesse, this is kind of right when he sees Freddy, right? And they meet at the staircase, and he rips that out, and you see his eyes, and his voice is just that deepness, and it's just like, Jesse, I need you.
Even that is one of those sexual moments when Robert.
Oh, that's
like,
the most. It's a meat.
You know, he he's doing this, and they're like, you know, put the glove near it. And he's like, I knew what it was. You know, yeah. I didn't want to make it look too sexual. Robert Englund seemed like he was
on board.
I
get it, of course.
I wanted a whole, like, honestly, I wanted, like, a whole uncut hour of just Robert maybe even talking to Mark Patton just about that, because it seemed like Robert was like, nah, I'm game for whatever you want to do. I thought it was great. And
Robert would do it.
And he actually in Scream Queens, I think he brings up an even more thoughtful answer than just like, yeah, you know, it was going to be real symbolism, me touching his lips and putting his mouth, and, you know, the story of the makeup artist coming over to be like, don't you fucking let him.
I love that story so much. Don't let him put that in you.
Robert Englund tells a story in it, though, of saying, I wasn't even just thinking it of as sexually. I was thinking it of, like, I'm this entity who needs to get into the real world. And you're, like, and thinking of it that way, it was just a very, like, elegant way he put it. And not just, but he was game for all of it. And it's a flirtation. I mean, yeah.
Well, that's one of the coolest things about Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger to me, is that Robert Englund's like a real thespian. He's not like a stuntman or anything. Like, that dude's like a legit actor. So, like, he always brought like that much effort to Freddy. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, I'm sure it got a little as the years went on, but, like, definitely in the early conceptualization of the character, he was putting in the work, and, like, it's on, I think it makes it to the screen, you know? He's great.
He does. That's why that him. Robert.
I also think it's interesting, though, about this movie of the, like, there is a little girl in, like, the fan, you know, Mark has a sister, or Jesse has a sister. And it's, except for the one scene, it's kind of, like, ignored, which is interesting and, like, conceptually about Elm Street, right? And Freddy of, like, haunting the kids, but there's a kid in the other room who's just, like...
Yeah.
And also, you know, Freddy's whole thing is supposed to be little girls
living,
and stuff, you know, that's
living her life.
Part of it.
Just living her life. Probably
she got her Fu Manchu fingers, she's good to go.
That box is so funny.
I wish that we had a good horror scene with the Fu Manchu fingers. You have to imagine that something drawn out that they just didn't have budget or something for. I don't know. That's my
one. The
scene
with her, the slow motion jump roping, though, is very effective. That's a good.
Oh, yeah.
With her in the middle of her room and stuff. Like, that's
and Jesse's
creepy.
Like.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. But they nail.
So he just nopes on out of there.
No big
like,
deal.
Nope. All right. My
hard pass,
sister
thanks.
Is done. but, you know, the dad, sorry if I'm skipping around or wherever here. The dad is like, you know, he has these things. Jesse's pretty freaked out, and he lets Lisa know. And then Lisa's like, helps him clean his room, basically. And we get the great, before we do, we get the great dancing scene of, I know they were trying to, you know, Risky Business is the model they were modeling it after, but it's its own breed. It also reminds me a lot of Troll 2's random dance scene with the sister in that, like, just out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. She just, you know,
yeah. Horror dance sequences, I mean, obviously
iconic.
Crispin Glover is a touchstone, but I'm a big fan of Ed Harris in Creepshow 2, the, like, you know, like, he's doing a lot in that.
Mark does his dance, and right after that, you know, his love interest shows up, we're there for, and they find Nancy's journal.
Yes.
And that's the catalyst, and that's where, like, in the background, like, all of a sudden, like, Lisa's so much more interested in it, and she's doing the research to figure this shit out, and but they read the journal, and at first it's like, you know, I think Rod across the street is cute, and I mean, it's a, you know, young Johnny Depp there, so, like, you would write that. But then they hit the Freddy part, but the way he is reading that, it's like, he's like, yeah, and they got inside, and, you know, or whatever the word is, it's a little reading section, and then it's like,
oh,
this was a murder. she watched. Close.
Yeah. And that's another one of the things that people, when they think about the entire franchise, how it doesn't fit, I'm like, they're literally reading Nancy's journal and they constantly reference Nancy. They constantly reference the events of the first film. Like, what are you talking about?
They talk about Glenn getting murdered.
Yeah.
Glenn's murder in the house across the street is almost as important as Nancy having lived in the house. Like, they kind of talk about them, like, in concert the whole movie.
Yeah. And, I mean, even, like, later on, like, the dad's installing the same freaking bars on the windows. And, you know, when after it runs out, you see him on the ladder. So, and I they're just listening to the way everything's connected, because I'm like, oh, those definitely were in the basement.
Is he taking them down?
He's taking them down.
Oh, he's taking them down. I'm an idiot. I thought he was putting them up.
It's okay.
The son ran away.
He's putting them back up. He's locking Mark.
At first, I was like, wow, those to get those fitted.
Heard these quick. Work before.
Yeah.
Got a good deal on them. They came with the house.
I bet this iron's worth a couple bucks, if nothing else. Taking them off and, like, selling them at the scrapyard.
That was the other canon thing I was wondering, too, of, you know, they add the power plant. We find out that we have the power plant element is where the boiler room was. And, like, I always thought it was the bottom of the school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I can see that, yeah. Yeah, they're kind of, it's ambiguous in the first one because it starts with you kind of seeing him working somewhere, building the, but they never really, yeah, I was kind of thinking that too. I was like, I didn't necessarily need the boiler room to be a real physical place. It's kind of more like Freddy's realm. It's kind of like
symbolic.
His representation of the dream realm. I was fine. They didn't need that. Yeah. You know, I was okay.
Marge says they took him to, you know, they found him in an old abandoned boiler room where he used to take his kids. But yeah, they never say what it is.
Yeah.
They say a boiler room.
So they figure out with the
old power
plant.
Yeah, they never make it something else. And it's this giant power plant. It's just massive.
Yeah, it feels like the end of Terminator 2. I was where are we going here?
Yeah, that's like one of those other questions. Like, bam, all right, this is lore now. We have a power plant. We're never going to come back here. And then, correct me if I'm skipping around or out of order, we then get our next big dream sequence of him wandering to the Dom's place.
Yeah.
And
to a leather bar.
Getting a beer. And also
a gay bar, though. There's lots it's more like a kink bar, I would say.
Yeah, it's like an kink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But maybe this is the only thing I noted. It's also when he orders that beer, pours a quarter of a beer in a like whiskey glass. Like a rocks glass and not like a pint. And once there's another like weird choice to me of,
hey, Bob Shea is not a bartender, okay? The man is an executive.
He's not an actor. He's not a bartender.
Honestly.
At least they didn't give any lines.
He wanted
this one.
To be.
I love watching documentaries.
His scenes in New Nightmare are my favorite, though. So funny.
I love watching Bob Shea.
Risotto con tartufi. It's fantastico.
Gonna give it another shot playing Nancy again. I also love in his office, which I couldn't imagine a New Nightmare that's his real office, is he has like the pop art of all Freddy in his background.
Yeah.
Of no, Bob Shea is such a character to me in any doc, any of those things, because he's always just trying to make himself look cool, and it just doesn't come across. Every time he talks,
he's got big
like,
principal building energy, you know.
Yes.
Hello, fellow kids. You know,
every time he talks, it's always like, "Yeah, Wes made the wrong decision, but I was just trying to do the right thing."
Anyway, come on,
that's pretty good, Bob. I learned that, you know, just how much Wes didn't like Bob Shea. I was talking to some people who work behind the scenes, and Wes would be like, if that man comes on this set again, I'm leaving. Like, tell me if he's around. I'm going to go high.
I believe that.
So good.
I believe that. I love Wes Craven, but he's such like an auteur in that, you know, in that sense. And, you know, and so I kind
of, one of our few horror auteurs.
He really is. It's
one of a real one of a kind.
It's yeah. Another movie that I'm happy to see getting a resurgence is like something Red Eye, another movie that I feel like he had like
that's a good
passion
movie
to make about. Anyway, we're back to this SNS scene. And then his principal comes over. Not principal, sorry, his gym coach is there. His leather daddy gym coach. Yep.
I love that his gym coach does not change out of his leather vest to take him to, like, he's got Mark running laps, but he's still got the vest on. So good.
But he just takes,
I love it. It's so cool.
I have seen, I was a 17, not in an S&M club, but I've seen a former history teacher in a bar. I think he had been let go or like left, but I was buying like a 12 pack for friends or whatever, because I was able to get served at like a random bar in town. And who comes walking in, you know, Mr. Smith, I forget his name, and we kind of gave each other and got out there, and I was like, holy shit. And then I learned, I was like, oh, he's not a teacher anymore. Thank
anything,
God.
But nothing stood out about his outfit. Was he
but
like...
But no, he didn't chew any gum. He didn't have,
did he
like,
have cuffs
his
on?
Shirt wasn't open with, like, a gold chain and, like, super tight pants or anything.
But, yeah, they take him, and he makes him run laps, which is also just, like, it also just, to me, shows, like, I know we're kind of in the dream world, I think, at that point, or like a
blurred line of
it.
There's definitely some flexibility of what's real in this part of it.
But
I would
Jesse also is still showing that vulnerability, being like, "Yeah, I'll go with you to assumably take a 15 minute drive to the high school
to go run some laps.
To go run laps in a gym, like, but then they hit the showers, and then the teacher dies by balls.
Yeah.
No, he gets whipped. He gets whipped to death and
balls and wet and towels.
I did like. I thought it was
marks.
Very, very dreamlike the way the wall shifted when he's in the ball, like when he's in his office, and then like the cabinet kind of turns and like points the balls at him, and then they start shooting out. Something about the way the like room change dimension felt very, it was like one of the points where I clocked the very kind of dreamlike element of it.
And yeah, and all of that too with the steam there, it's that great shot of seeing Jesse then walk out and it's Freddy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's real good,
you know. And then we cut and then like to the parents waking up and, you know, casual cops just going, oh, you know, keep a leash on this kid. Or is this yours?
I love they just like find a naked kid on the street and they're like, nah, boys will be boys. Here you go.
And the mom's so sweet because she's just like,
she is a good
wrong.
Parent though. She really
is. She's like, maybe we go to therapy. And the dad's like,
the mom,
drugs.
Jesse's on his like sixth day of no sleep and he like stumbles down the stairs and is pouring himself coffee. He's got like huge circles under his eyes. And his mom's like, you're looking better. He like looks like hammered shit.
She's just doing her best.
She's really trying, you know.
Yeah, and that's when the dad is all just like reveals the whole thing we were just talking about. Being like, actually, this place is pretty fucked up.
Well, I love Jesse. Just like no tact, though. He's got like his little sister. He's not worried about her like being traumatized in any way, shape, or form. He's just like blurts it all out in front of her.
She's gotta know, man.
Nah, I guess so.
You have to kill for me. So the shower, most of my notes are, this scene is something. This is something. But I can believe
every other scene in the movie he was oblivious, but I cannot imagine directing a scene where you're like, okay, the jump ropes are gonna tie you up, and now we're gonna take some nice
your
loving close-ups of your butt cheeks getting whipped.
So many butts in this.
I mean, there's a, like, Marshall Bell's butt cheeks get some screen time in this movie. Mm-hmm. Tom Atkins level screen time.
Oh yeah.
But
and they jiggle, too.
Yeah, he gets a nice little snap on him.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, so he shows up. I did write, though, maybe this is just like, I was like, fair question by the dad, honestly, even though it's the wrong time to be like, this is a drugs.
Yeah, I have to say that despite the fact that the dad's an asshole from? Most of the movie, he's pretty justified in being like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Once I became a parent, I became much more tuned into that of like what it would be like if your kid just started acting wild like this and you had no idea. And they're telling you something that can't possibly be true, but like they're begging you to believe them and you're trying to do the right thing, you know, like it's tough.
Yeah.
I like to think I would do a better job because most parents in horror movies are shit.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'd like to actually. Great.
They're either not around at all or they're very bad.
Or like The Exorcist, like I'm just blanking on names left and right. The, you know, the mother in that. She's a great mother. She tried everything before she turned to like maybe it's a demon.
Yeah.
That's my first thought. I'm like it's possessed. Chuck them out the window. Get rid of them.
Try again.
But I do have a note in here, and like I know we're saying this movie is like really well made in this. To me, also parts though is it's really edited like a sitcom. Like there's like we see the house establishing shot a lot.
Yeah,
this is just like a weird filmmaking note where I was like, now the studio audience today on Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, it's like you show the outside shot and then it cuts to them in the living room and you have the little
because it's a really yeah. it's a really like really nice, well contained movie. Like we're going through it, and I'm like, wow, they're. We're next lead up scene is really just like the pool party. Like it's every lead up to the pool party. Like please correct me if I'm missing any big beats here.
No, we're hitting the main beats, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting it.
And you know, this big pool party, and he's so distraught, but he's like, fine, I'll go. I shouldn't be at a party, but I'll go. And that's when he has his big moment with like Lisa.
Shout out to Lisa's dad as Benny Goodman Records.
No. Lisa's dad, it might be the most character human. There's a giant pool party running around. Then he runs upstairs and the music goes up a little bit and he's like, oh, these goddamn kids are going to sleep. It's like, you let them have a fucking 30
person party. Yeah, like you did not expect. I also love the kids who are like, oh, the lights are off. They're clearly immediately asleep and I'll just crank the music. It's like, they're still obvious. They like just turned off the light. But the parents
are fucking too, which is also like everyone's just super horny in this movie all the time. Yeah. Sorry, Brian, you were.
It is.
No. I clocked the Benny Goodman thing because when I was in junior high, I joined the band.
Because you grew up in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. It was 1947.
Yeah.
And I played the sousaphone. Yeah. I was Benny Goodman, actually.
Yeah, you were the first kid with a theremin on your block.
Yeah, that's fair. But I joined the school band, and I couldn't. You had to start with the clarinet. You weren't allowed to start with the saxophone. You had to like start with the clarinet, and then you could work your way up. And like, and to inspire me, my parents bought me Benny Goodman and Kenny G CDs. Like I was gonna listen to them and be like inspired and like
start, not like Jethro Tull or something like that.
So I just like hearing the name Benny Goodman to me brought back a flood of embarrassing.
For a certain memories. Generation of people, they were like Benny Goodman. And I was like, I'm scared.
Andy Williams.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Oh man. Also, there's some weird set placing. Did you guys notice? I know I'm jumping around here, but I'm really looking at my notes. The fucking like random headshot that's like on the wall on the way up from the basement.
They talk about that in the Red Letter Media video.
Do they?
Headshots in all these movies in a bunch of the. Like, at a bunch of different places, in a bunch of different entries in the franchise, there's, like, headshots of former characters, or, like,
okay.
In one of them, they're looking at a magazine, and Johnny Depp's in the magazine, so it's, like, a weird, like, kind of, like,
so maybe that's typical. That's a thing. I was like...
Yeah, I don't remember who it is in this one at the top of the stairs, but, yeah, there's definitely, like, weird headshots, and, like, sometimes a picture won't be a picture, it's, like, clearly a headshot, you know?
Yeah. I love those.
Yeah. There's such good little. Well, there's those little treats in this movie too, which either the headshots or like all the background clear pounds of. Like you said, someone knew because he is assigned as a 17-year-old boy. No chicks allowed. Yeah. Or like what's the board game Bone? It's like not Bone. It's like Bong or Oink.
Oink.
There's a board game in the background. It's like the set decorators. had an idea.
They were up to something. Go ahead, Jim.
I was just saying, but we're at the pool party, so that's where.
Well, yeah, and things are heating up. Now, this was, I know everybody's like, you know, we all know the scenario, you know, he gets freaked out with Lisa, but he can feel Freddy coming out, so he runs off, and he runs to Grady, and we all understand the subtext, and we have Grady's murder. Here's my thing that caught me this time, and it's totally unrelated to any of that, and we can talk more about that actual, but I was like, Lisa has the conversation with her friend that she's going to go find Jesse.
I love her friend, by the way. We haven't messaged her at
all. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, her friend's great, but, like, Lisa actually, like, takes so long getting ready that Jesse has time to murder Grady and come back. She's, like, she goes and changes her clothes. Like, what was wrong with, like, your bathing suit outfit? Just go find Jesse. You don't need to go, like, oh, wait, I've got to go into my finding Jesse outfit.
A lot of time. And then, Grady lives around the corner but can't go to this party. That's how close.
Yeah, why wasn't Grady at the party?
No, he was grounded.
He was grounded. He was
grounded.
Grandma
down the stairs.
Yeah.
Grady's got, it's funny because his name's Rob, right? And it's like, he is like Rod kind of from the first
movie. I said Rod earlier accidentally.
He's got like that frenemy energy where he's like, there's an antagonistic kind of thing, but they're clearly still friends. It's,
and the way Jesse just like gets into his room.
Yeah.
How did he get in there? Because he has to move stuff when he's escaping after he murders him. Mm-hmm. He has to move stuff from the window. So, He either climbed in the window and carefully placed that stuff back before he jumped on Grady's bed.
Can't imagine he would have done that.
It's not like the Clarissa explains it all, like window where it's like, oh, I'm gonna just come up and there's some logistical questions.
Hey, you know, everything can be mocked up to Freddy powers. You know, somehow Freddy got him in there. That's all that matters. Yeah.
Freddy's stealth mode.
Freddy's into him in him now. So.
He is into him.
Yeah, a little bit
But they go to
this
Ron.
Is one of the big effect sequences in the movie too, and it's really great.
It's if I do have like a negative note, I wish there was more kills, just from like one or two more, because we do get Grady has a great kill scene from him bursting out of his chest, full blown alien, to walking up and the parents trying to get to the door, you know, and just the way he gets his like neck slashed,
claw all the way through and then drug her down the door and like the blood came through. That's all really good.
It's mean. Like, I love when Freddy is mean.
Yeah.
And we get Freddy mean in this.
I love the effect before Freddy fully comes out and breaks out. I love the effect of like Mark's shredded skin on his arm, the sweater is coming through under the skin out.
and the thing,
talked about how that's like a precursor to the new Nightmare glove where the blades actually come out of the fingertips and they're kind of melded. Once he's fully Freddy, they don't have him in the glove. He still has that kind of melded hand.
Entity in one. And this is a really underrated possession movie. I think we've said that a few times. Mm-hmm. So he does that, and then like Jesse goes back to Jesse and runs back to tell Lisa, you know.
This is the point where you're like, girl, you are being too understanding. This dude is drenched in blood.
Yeah.
He just he left your make sesh to go. Do God knows what. Now he's back at your house, and he looks like he took a blade shower. Like, he looks like he was at the blade club.
Blade shower. Yeah, dude. He's distraught and stressed and
He's got some stuff going on.
Yeah, and it's like, I appreciate Lisa likes him and everything, but, like, you got to draw the line somewhere. And when a man shows up drenched in blood, that's probably the time.
Or, like, makes out with you and, you know, runs away and comes back with blood. It's like,
he could have been playing hard to get. I get it. There's games, but
hard to get by like
blood soaked is where I'm drawing.
Like if you're in the middle of making out and then you're like in a sensitive area and he goes like this, I'd be like, what happened?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So crushed. But she's ready. She
doesn't know he's hiding a freak tongue. She thinks she's the problem.
Because he's in going down position.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's
he's on his way for sure.
Because he went from that's my also a thing about their hookup is it goes from zero to 100. Yeah, he was like, well, no time like now to do everything at once.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
Well, but, to be fair, it's one of those things where she's got to pull the trigger if she wants it to happen, because Jesse might not be around much longer. This guy is, he might be flaming out.
And also, there's a nice wordplay.
He's flaming out.
Yeah. I know you didn't mean it, but.
Got some double entendres.
And the whole pool party going on is wild to me, too. It's just like, yeah, we're going to do this on the floor of the pool house. And who cares about the 40 other extras we got outside?
Yeah. They're all losing their tops in the pool, you know?
Yeah, and this is a movie that has restraint, though. We don't get any, like, classic 80s, like, slasher nudity, like, female nudity.
All we get is butts.
Just Marshall Bell's ass.
Marshall Bell's ass. Mark Patton and Marshall Bell's ass.
That's like the, you know, the Junkrabbit fan base.
That's about it.
Fox that in Scream Queens. They're like, hey, you know, we're hard. There wasn't a lot of male nudity going on. You know, you took what you could get. Mm-hmm. If it was Marshall Bell's bare ass getting whipped with a towel, well, that's what it was.
Oh,
a proud moment for Marshall Bell.
He's still running with it.
He seemed pretty into it. I'm not gonna lie. He seemed down for whatever.
He was down. What was the creepiness in was it? No, it was in New Night. Never Sleep Again. Was it the dad who was like, everyone's getting, I never got a blowjob on set or something like that. It was so like, it was clearly put in as a comedy beat.
Yeah.
But like, it's such an out there, like, why'd we leave this in the documentary? I watched it today.
Excuse me?
It was like, it was just like an old man joke he was making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
could have been going on. I mean, who knows?
I think he was just saying it from anyone. He was like, so this was the type of movie we're making, sure.
He didn't realize it. He's like, I was in a sex movie and I didn't even know it. I missed out.
I thought this was a porno? Nightmare, too.
Who knows? But the pool scene, we kind of already went through the whole pool scene, but it's some of the funnest elements of Freddy and running around. This is also where I said the movie did. There is silly moments of like Freddy, like being like, "Oh, china!" Like the throwing like the nice china of the house on the floor, and like it's very what would happen in like talking about starter horror. It's very what would happen in like Goosebumps, like, you know, like the haunted mask, how she'd behave. Of like, if I just throw your dishes on the floor, that's or the even scariest like, thing.
You know, slowly walking and knocking a bunch of stuff down in kind of an intimidating way, you know.
But I love it when he stabs the guy in the gut and like his whole, he goes,
yeah.
It's like, there's just over the top, or they fall into the fire off of the fence. And
oh, they go to the thing and he
zaps the
yes.
Because my wife was in for this, sitting with me for that scene. She was like, why don't these people just run away? And I'm like, just watch, Laura. Like, you'll see why.
How could they possibly, Joe, how could they possibly get over a lattice work?
There's no
I'm
way.
Trapped. I can't
get out. Dude. And I love it when the guy's like, come on, man.
You know? Oh, the guy trying Freddy's to talk like, him down is so funny. Like, do whatever you want, bro.
No,
I can totally see.
Fucker. That's just one of the best lines.
Fucker. I could totally see a cocky,
that's
like...
he's not quite Quip Freddy yet, but he's getting there, right? Like, that's as close as he maybe gets in this movie. It's not prime time, bitch, but he's on his way.
He's close.
So funny.
But, yeah, the dude who's like, all right, be cool, man. Cool.
Guy watched The Negotiator. He's gonna talk him down.
Do you want my Rolex? Pretty nice. It's fun. But then like the party goers just kinda do their thing and Lisa's like, Jesse, we could solve this. We're gonna go to the power plant.
Well, the dad chases him out, right? Dad's gonna almost shoots Jesse.
Dad brings a shotgun.
Dad brings a shotgun to the party, which good
and
for him.
He's the worst shot in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible.
He totally has the drop on him. He could have just splattered him.
Yeah.
He's real close.
And Freddy's, honestly, this is what I love, because Freddy does in that scene, looks at him like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I love the walk, I the kind of casual exit. Walk through the fence and the flame. That's a great effect.
They're all my children now.
Yep. Oh, and again, I feel like that's an iconic line that's in this movie that people probably don't even realize is from this one, because I feel like that's a very iconic Freddy moment.
Yeah.
That you're all my children now. Mm.
You could confuse that. It doesn't that really with, get like, the credit. The
glove, I bet a lot of people would think that was from the first movie.
Yeah, sorry. Like, mm-hmm. I can confuse that with like the iconic, like, you know, glove in the first movie where he, you know, he's very in that silhouette pose. You could almost see that same scene. Mm-hmm. This movie's like filled. I know we've just broken record with that. It's filled with a bunch of this stuff that is just undervalued, I think. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of undervalued, when she chases him to the. To the what did we decide that was
power plant? Kind
of factory power
plant. It's power plant. Yeah.
One of the most disturbing images in the whole movie are those dogs with the weird baby faces.
Yeah, baby face dogs.
That's nightmare. That's some nightmare shit that's for
like,
sure.
Yeah. That's like hell's coming out finally, and like
it's the so... dogs clearly didn't like them either, because you can only get like a couple seconds, and they're always like.
I love that the.
You can tell those dogs did not have a good time.
No. They're no like, the masks, meh. I love that the NECA figures, I think, come, the NECA figure for Freddy 2 come with, I think, two of those dogs or one of those dogs.
Gross.
Yeah.
Very, like, again, a kind of almost a throwaway, like, design choice, but very, very effective.
It's creepy.
Yeah, very effective. Memorable.
But this is when it's like, this is kind of when like we lose Jesse Wright and it's like Lisa's movie now. And I think the flaw of this movie, like another nightmare where like its ending isn't quite as strong because we're with Jesse the whole time. This is my opinion of this. Like,
yeah, it should be Jesse's big.
It should be Jesse's.
Yeah.
Like another pun I would say, like, coming out and fighting Freddy and like coming like actually having not really, because this is kind of where it has one of my favorite moments of it, but you have you know, she does what a lot of movies like to do now with I fought you with love, I love you, and
it's the most Disney ending of all the nightmares.
Well, and she does the whole fight him, Jesse,
get him out, fight, you know. And they do the ADR of Jesse talking through, and but the way they let Freddy the Freddy makeup burn and go and gooey and melt, and it's kind of like the way the man picks off his face in Poltergeist. Like, it's that same makeup. That's so good.
Yeah.
Give really me more good. Of the melting face and, like, the way... that's actually... I know this is not what we're talking about. That's how I wish it looked in New Nightmare when it happens. Instead of that... And, you know, instead of the devil coming up.
Like, oh, the kind of, like... Because they did that morph effect at the end.
Yeah, it's like the week... I was just talking about it today. That's why
it's weird that the ending is always... I almost forget about the ending of New Nightmare every time I watch it.
It's weak.
So geared up for, I love everything about it. And then you're like, and then when once Nancy kind of goes into the bed and you're into the kind of like catacombs, I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's wrap it up.
It's like, that's a whole different, you could listen to me talking to Paige Troxell, director of Fredheads, about New Nightmare. Unless we talk about there, but like this has a similar right. Like I love the way it goes out and fades, and then they're like, you know, the couple's embracing each other, and like DeAndre, like you said, it's their it's a Disney-ish ending, but
it's kind of the Beauty and the Beast ending, right? Like he becomes a prince again and whatever, you know.
I don't hate the ending, I just don't like it for this movie because it's Jesse's movie. I don't know. I feel like you should keep talking.
Yeah, then there's just the jump scare at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's the stinger at the end of this one?
That's about it. And then, they're talking about it's all over, and the friend and the Freddy's claw comes out of her chest.
Yeah, that's right.
Bob Shay gonna have that.
Hey, but you can't complain because, like, we needed to get Dream Warriors because that's just the fantastic book.
That's, mm-hmm. yeah. That's that Nancy's that. Trilogy.
Yeah, you get that Nancy trilogy.
I know. I bought that boot. I bought a, like, from one of those bootleg Blu-ray sites that edited the three movies together, like the Nancy cut. And it's nice to own. It's a nice little, like, piece. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just watch the three movies in full.
Yeah.
You know, because it goes, and then it cuts off as soon as you lose Nancy. And then it goes to New Nightmare. And then you just watch all of New Nightmare. You know, so.
Oh, like, they don't even put the end of, like, the
end. They don't get the end of Dream Wars.
Isn't even in it. Like, you don't even see the climax of three.
No. It was very, like,
Oh, that's interesting.
I honestly just gave some fan edit person $23 to own three movies I ran. Speaking of that, we need.
Well, Topher Grace needed that money.
We need a premiere version of these seven movies, like that Friday the 13th collection. Scream Factory needs to get, or Arrow needs to get on this shit.
Yeah,
it's gotta be sweet. But, you know, the Craven Estate is what's holding it up.
Is that what's holding it up?
Yeah, the Craven Estate is the reason that we haven't really had anything, is that, you know, the rumors are true that the asking price for the rights to Nightmare are just so high. They want to make bank. So, you know.
Hey, if Exorcist can get, what was it, whatever, $44 million for the rights, when they haven't had nearly as many successful sequels as the Nightmares have.
They could do it. I feel like.
I had to.
Well, it's actually more. I had to buy the Blu-ray of just the first
one. Oh, 100 million? They'll do. I mean, like.
Just get a couple people together, you know? Just no big deal.
They're gonna make their money back. We're big fans.
All they would have to do to make their money, they could make that Halloween 2018 money. All they would need is to bring Robert Englund back. That's all you need. Yeah. All you need.
He's just so old now. Like, he has to sit down at cons. He's spending less time.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I actually don't want them to do that. But that's what they would do if they wanted to make the, if, like, all they care about is getting that, like, you know, that theatrical ticket money in.
I don't acknowledge the remake, but I'm for a way to re-bring it back. And, like, actually, Deandre, I think you and I, you probably don't even remember, went back and forth once on TikTok of talking about how to bring back Nightmare. And, like, I'm in the camp of, like, oh, like, let's do it as, like, an entity, kind of like they did Candyman 2019. But I think your take was, like, yeah, but that's still not going to fly. You're going to need a Freddy. You can't just be, like, it's the Freddy entity.
Yeah, because if it was an entity, like, the new Nightmare approach worked, but if it's in the world of Nightmare, it would be hard, because people want to see Freddy, you know? And so you either have to do, like the way that they did Loomis in the new Halloween trilogy, where you find somebody who looks like Robert, and you can probably do a voice very similar and can have prosthetics on them.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have, like,
the voice is something Robert could still do. You know, you could have him do record the voice over still.
Like, I actually don't like how they did it, but, like, kind of like in Chucky, the TV series, how, Fiona did her dad, but he still did the voice, but I still think she should have did the voice, but...
Well, then later when, not to get too much into Chucky, but she's possessed by Chucky, and she's doing a Brad Dourif impression
when he's
talking through her, and it's very good. Mm-hmm. So I agree that, like, you probably didn't need to have her to do his voice.
But, yeah, there's a way to do it, I think, of bringing...
But Nightmare not everybody's got and... a... Got a child that does a perfect impression of them waiting in the wings, either.
Who's a really good actor.
Yeah. It just so happens to be a great actress.
Just bring it back to Nightmare 2, anything we didn't bring up or you wanted to touch on or mention that stood out, like, that, you know, this movie? And
I'm glad that it's getting more recognition. I know that some of the problems that people have had, they've been like, well, I rewatched it recently and I actually don't understand why I didn't like it. Mm. I feel like a lot of the reasons that people don't like it is because maybe they haven't, like, conquered their original perspective on it, or they're just not admitting that they don't like the gay in Nightmare 2.
I feel like
that's the big thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point with that, because it's just so uncommon is what I'm trying to, the words I'm trying to find, right? Yeah. So it's like, yeah, if that's something that makes you uncomfortable, you know, I feel like someone that thinks that way would probably be like, oh, play for me what's the drag horror movie? I'm just trying to think of a really gay horror movie.
Death Drop Gorgeous?
Thank you. Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
It'd probably be more of like let me watch Drop Death Gorgeous over this, because at least it's like right there, right? I don't know where I'm going. But like, no, that's a really good point, Dan, because if you come with that perspective, it's a good Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It's not like the way we talk about Halloween 3, where you say, right, oh, if this was just called Season of the Witch and not Halloween 3, everyone would really like it, or at least appreciate it. Like, that's the two sentences. This one's like, no, it's a good Nightmare movie. It's actually, yeah. I think if I were to really think about it, it's probably my fourth favorite Nightmare movie.
I would say it's definitely, with the Nancy trilogy. It's a strong entry for sure.
I also think,
and this just comes from being online and talking about movies, no matter how beloved the franchise, some movie is always has to be the one that is the bottom. Mm-hmm. And some people are just always going to be kind of lazy about it. And once they've made that decision, that's always going to be the one that's on the bottom for them. And they're not really going to analyze that much. And because in their mind, it's not their favorite one, they won't go back to it as often, which means it won't get its chance to get reanalyzed. So yeah, I guess my final thoughts would be, anybody who's watching this who hasn't been a fan or was maybe tuning into hopes of hearing people rip on what's considered a bad entry in the franchise, maybe go back and give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully we've given some perspectives where people are like, okay, now I see this differently. Or like, I didn't think it was tied, but since you mentioned like the possession and how it ties into like Freddy versus Jason and, you know, all these different elements, hopefully they're like, okay, now it makes sense. It actually does tie into some of the other things that Freddy has done in the world of Nightmare. It really does.
It does. It's
creepy.
Yeah,
I think we've talked about very
scary design in this one. I think, like, from a pure horror standpoint, he's very scary in this one.
And the lighting and the score. The score is different, but we really only had Charles Bernstein's score, but the score in this is so haunting.
I don't want to make it seem like I dragged the director a little bit earlier, but I actually think this movie's directed really great. I think he's, like, the whole thing of, like, being like a workman who brings the page to the screen, he nailed that. He did a really great job of that. So I don't want to ever, want to make sure that's clear too.
Another thing, it's not the movie itself. I love the artwork of the poster.
Underrated,
yeah, Brian showed to us. Underrated.
You know what? I don't think I have two out. Sorry.
I don't know.
Because it's over here on the floor.
An underrated thing about Nightmare 2, or at least for a while, is like awesome posters.
That great art. So good.
They leave with this obscure style, right? Of like the demon or whatever. Instead of just being like, you know, one of the most popular things, Freddy Krueger. You don't get him on the cover really till like looking like Freddy fully till like Freddy's dead, I want to say.
Yeah, it's not new.
Yeah, so that's Nightmare 2. I mean, I think the three of us probably could just keep rattling off horror and talking Nightmare, so I'm going to have to call it at some point.
It's fair.
Deandra, as always, do you have anything to plug, and where can people find you? And thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you guys
for having me. I'm really honestly happy to hear that you guys like Nightmare 2 and you have a lot of positive things to say about it, because it's because I do like it so much as a movie. And I always talk about the Nancy movies because those are the ones that I know the best. Mm-hmm. And especially New Nightmare, because it is my favorite movie of all time.
It's great.
But
it's so good.
It's so good. Okay, I'm going to rein it in. But and Mark Patton, like, I honestly credit a lot of Nightmare 2's success to Mark Patton, because when the internet started to get like some of the actors on, he was on the internet in like 2010, mm-hmm. heading into 2011, talking to people. He's out there. He wrote Jesse's Lost Journals. He is partnering with people to get, you know, he's had his documentary, which if anybody hasn't seen it, definitely check it out. He's partnered
with It's free on Tubi shoes. Right now.
Just for watching.
So is Fredheads. Boom.
Oh, yes.
That double feature.
This is good. That's a great doc too.
Thank you. But I mean, he really is. And I've talked to some of the Nightmare stars, and we bring up Mark Patton, and they're all like, yeah, he's out there talking to people. He's such a great example. He is so genuine, and people have really started to love the movie more.
Well, and just a good ambassador for queer horror too, yeah. in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, really out there.
Really?
Oh, it's it was like eye opening today. Google those like, Scream Kings or whatever, like top, and it's literally just Mark Patton. I mean, like, now we're getting a few, but there's no like iconic one. It's just like
Sam Justin Neal.
Long is
okay,
in a few
Sam things. Neal.
No, I don't mean
Devin Sawa.
Yes, Devin Sawa. If there's like five of them, is what I'm.
Kyle Gallner, honestly, I think
he's getting Kyle Gallner's getting there. Absolutely. I watched the whole video. Red Letter Media did a whole video about him, and I was not like I had seen some, but it's like
cursed. Right?
I didn't realize I had seen so many him in so Kyle many Gallner things. Cursed?
No, he's in the Nightmare remake. Anyway,
he is in the Nightmare remake.
Yeah. And Scream. And Haunting in Connecticut, Jennifer's Body.
Yes,
like,
Jennifer's
just
Body.
Just a bunch of different ones. He's in The Passenger, which recently came out. I haven't had a chance to rent it yet, but
so they,
yeah, he's done some really good stuff.
Yeah. So the Scream Kings exist, but yeah, like the Mark
But Patton no, they is, are very rare, obviously.
Yeah. I love what he said in Scream Queens, though, of the conventions and meeting and being an ambassador. He's like, no, I need to give everyone the genuine experience or else... Why is this my job to ruin their day? They're paying me
right.
whatever money for
you
an
You think you're drink. A whore, be a good whore, because
yeah,
they're paying
that
you
was
money.
The quote.
Like,
yeah.
I have heard him say that so many times about different people, like, just offbeat. And so the fact that he put it in there and he kept it in there, I'm so proud that he did, because that is just a true statement. And I've noticed more stars coming out and being like, if you don't like these people mm-hmm. or you aren't going to give them a good time, why are you here? And it's so true, you know? You could ruin your entire career or their entire life because
Oh, yeah,
you
that whole, like, don't
them.
Meet your heroes. I mean, think about that. Like, you could ruin your whole perception. This person whose whole life is leading up to this moment, and all you got to do is smile and be friendly for, like, 30 seconds, and you'll make their whole day. Yeah. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Can't just take their money. But, yeah, great documentary. Major kudos to Mark Patton. Such a good dude. He really has helped bring Nightmare 2 to the forefront. But as far as me, just we had a short come out on Captain Sassy on YouTube called 5 Stars. We came up with the premise with a bunch of our audience, and we wrote it kind of with them and then put it down on paper and shot it in a couple nights. We have a Spooky Sips episode coming out with one of the Nightmare 2 cast members who was here in the studio with me.
Nice.
And then, we have some
it's Marshall
other fun
Bell's butt, everybody.
Yeah! Listen, if you could find Marshall Bell's butt, put in a good word for me.
I just love the idea of you having a drink and it's like just his cheeks right there. Like, you take a sip, you feed the cheeks a sip.
It's very good.
Feed the cheeks.
Ooh, this IP is a little hoppy. After that, we'll have all that, though, in our description and whatnot. And as always, thank you so much. You can find Brian and us on this channel and on our Twitters or wherever we're talking now and TikToks and stuff. So,
this was fun, dudes.
Yeah, thank you
so much. No, a pleasure. I hope maybe we can get you back for some Dracula 2000 sometime. Yeah.
I'll be in there. Just
Joe said he's never seen it, which that
yeah, we'll set this up. I'll never see it
until it's time to do the episode.
I can make that happen.
Yes.
I can hold off until
hold off. I know it's hard, but please wait. No. Please resist.
All right, so we have a recording with Deandra next week for Dracula 2000. Stay frightful.
Welcome our new co-host, Deandra. I want to talk about this movie.
We'll set it up. But anyway, stay frightful, everyone. Thank you so much. Bye.
Welcome to Fly. I overstate of fear.